But one thing that that we've been asking people concerns the relationship with AID and tainting, you know, in a sense, your association, but tainting by association. Did you ever, do you feel that at some point that IVS should not have been in Laos?
Sure. Yes.
When would that have been?
I think they probably reached that point when it was very clear. It was clear enough, if you wanted to see it, that we weren't going to be able, American presence was not going to survive. When the American presence, when it was clear that Americans could not stay there, that our involvement, we ultimately, that Laos was going to go communist, at least for a time, IVS probably should have left. And that that the realization that, that none of us, people didn't belong any place in Indochina with weapons. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I got a very good example, in fact. When I went to Borneo, we went up the I forget the river, into Sarawak. And we went up as far as we could, I think, to a town called Kapit. And if you were going to go beyond Kapit, you had to have regional permission because they did not want outsiders influencing the people that lived in the bush, in these villages.
Okay.
And you had to have regional people. And we got a school principal who was Chinese, I believe, but he was belonged in the country. He was a citizen. And he took us up maybe a couple miles up the river to a village and let us stay overnight in this village. So we had a little bit of experience of living in a village. And we could see one. But the only people that went upriver into these villages was primarily scientists within very severe limits of what they could do, anthropologists and stuff like that, and government workers. Government workers, the only thing government workers, I believe, could do was provide these people with vaccines to prevent disease, drill wells so they got fresh water, and possibly look after some medical needs. But they were severely limited in what they could do to affect that culture.
Couldn't go up there building roads,
right?
For
and
example.
They certainly couldn't go up there bringing weapons or doing this kind of thing. And I always think about Star Trek a lot, with this prime directive, which at the time...
The new generation.
The old generation didn't have a prime directive.
No, the old generation was cowboys.
Were they? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure whether they had a prime directive
I mean, you're thinking of the Jean-Luc Picard as captain.
That's what I'm thinking
of. Not Kirk.
Not Kirk. Okay.
Kirk was the cowboy who would go in and shoot him up and have sex with all the aliens, which really makes you wonder what diseases he would have had. I mean, we think AIDS is bad. Think what he might have picked up.
I never really thought about that.
I'm not sure that should have been on the tape, but
yeah,
what the hell?
Not. You can erase it. You're in charge.
No, I won't. I'll just leave it on there.
But I
said it, not you.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that because it was very different than what I saw Americans doing, where we, in many countries, not just Laos and Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand, but Indonesia, South America, where we go in and we supply weapons, we build a military. And in this case, they were saying, hey, these are people that should keep their identity to the degree that they want to. If they want to come down the river and go live in a city and they want to learn these kind of things, that's fine. But the kind of effect we should have on their culture is limited and to what's beneficial to them. And I think in a lot of ways, not just in... not just in Indochina, but in a lot of in our foreign policy, a lot of it has to do with equipping armies, and we cause a lot of. And I know that sounds real out there, but that's reality, and I don't think anybody can really deny it, that we have played a very strong role in dictatorships and weapons. In as a foreign policy, particularly for an organization called AID, I'm not really sure that. It was an agency for international development.
Yes. Yeah, well, Development for who?
Yeah.
We developed it fine for ourselves.
Yeah, right. They used to call you.
You thought it was for other people? Oh, come on.
You've seen the symbol of the two hands together. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they still
The handshake thing, yeah, on the flour bags.
They used to call that
on the bulgur wheat bags.
Used to call that the hand that never lets go.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all sorts of jokes about that hand. So, if you so yeah so so you think yes we should have withdrawn, mm-hmm, as soon as we saw that it was futile. Mm-hmm. What year would you give to that?
I don't think I'm really knowledgeable in this area to say. I know, mm-hmm, I was aware of it in by 67, but...
Well, you came in 68.
Well, I guess I left in 70, yeah, about 69.
Okay.
I was aware of it in 69. But, you know, this is I think that there were people that knew better than me.
And perhaps earlier.
And earlier, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think there were people that really realized this. I think there's just an enormous amount of denial on this. I think people really close their minds to reality. I think that's caused a lot of the problems.
And that people wanted to stay when they knew better that they shouldn't?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The organization, I mean, that sounds terrible, but those things happen. You know, if I don't do this, I've got to cut my administration.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've had jobs where... my supervisor, I had this person as a supervisor simply because we had to justify that person's position. Had AID money not been there, IVS would be right where it is right now to a large degree.
Uh-huh.
A very much smaller organization, much tighter.
Uh-huh.
And to make that kind of decision to disenfranchise, to take yourself, separate yourself from America's involvement in Indochina would have meant a much smaller organization. I don't know if I were sitting in Washington with IVS, I don't know if I could have. My decision probably would have been to take all the AID money I could take. I mean, I'll take ownership of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have a responsibility to the organization and the board of directors.
And you wouldn't see it down at the
I might
local
not see
level.
It, and if I did see it, I might ignore it. I mean, I'd be honest. I can't judge people. I really shouldn't judge people. I can say this is what I saw, this is what I know,
mm-hmm,
but I wasn't in a position to change that other than to speak out on it. And just talking about something and speaking out on it is cheap. You notice I did not get on a plane and leave Laos when I knew it.
Yeah, you stayed another year.
And I'll take the responsibility for that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's... No,
I could have done more. Well, why should I blame other people? Because they didn't.
Well, that was also the case that you weren't there in 66 or 67, so therefore, if the organization should have left at that time, you wouldn't have been in a position to know anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could only know from your own experience. Mm-hmm. Just to pause for a second to tell you my own impression here. You know, as a people, the hippies in Asia would not have wanted to go to war too much. Yeah. But no, I found it very interesting that everyone comes to their own opinion about the conditions in which they worked and whether they were doing the right thing, and they reach a conclusion, and if they do say, yes, we should have gone,
mm-hmm,
it's at some point in their experience, but they don't realize what happened before.
Yeah.
One of the few people that had the length of experience wasn't actually in Laos, but Vietnam, but that was Don Luce, mm-hmm, who was in very early. I think his arrival date was 60. And of course, he resigned in 67 in protests, mm-hmm, along with some others. And
read his book.
Yeah. Okay. The him and Summer. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So he could come to this conclusion, you know, mm-hmm, over a period of time, and see the changes that would go on. You know. So how if you had to say IVS affected your life. What would be the main things that you would,
I would
enumerate?
Say, yeah, I would say probably the disenchantment. It was a part of growing up,
uh-huh,
and there's certain things that did a little more reality of the world.
Uh-huh.
As I said in the questionnaire, that I no longer believed everything I heard on the news. or that everything that was important was on the news.
Mm-hmm.
My government was not all good.
Mm-hmm.
It was not gonna, I could never go back to believing in my country, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That probably was the big thing. I was growing up, I guess. I grew up to some degree. I got a broader perspective. I definitely learned more about the world. Traveling is a whole different thing, and living someplace is a whole different thing than reading it in the book.
Yeah.
And living there for 2 years, I think, did show me some things. It's kept my interest. Whenever I see a Hmong, we have Hmong here in the community, I always talk to them and ask them questions and how they're doing.
Uh-huh.
And at this time, most of the ones I meet are, weren't even born or were babies.
Right, during the war, yeah.
During the war. I'm always pleased when I talk to somebody that's happy and is doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are.
Yeah.
The children, basically what I'm talking to are the children of people that were in Laos when I was there.
Uh-huh.
And on occasion I talk with Lao that were in Laos when I was there. Or Hmong, primarily Hmong. You're more Hmong here than I think anything else.
Yeah, because they had to skedaddle.
Mm-hmm. They do have a problem, which is kind of sad. First of all, they don't belong. They should not. They don't belong here. When I say they don't belong here, I don't mean that I'd like them to leave, because they can't leave. What I mean is that it's unfortunate they have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't have a country. I'm pleased that this is a country that they can come to. I'm pleased that our government has taken the responsibility to give them a place to go, because our government does have a responsibility to these people. I'm not pleased with the fact that they were uprooted from their homeland and a place that was rightfully theirs and where they were more comfortable, because they do not, culturally, they're having an awful time adjusting with the language, the dress, the customs. And they're having problems all over the country.
Yeah, no, I know. My sister's community across Wisconsin had a huge Hmong population, and it was all, they were doing as well as any human being could possibly do, but it was so overwhelming because the cultural difference from where they came to what they had come into was so great.
I think of our contribution of Americans in Laos and probably with the Mountain Yards in Vietnam is, there's that song about the teacher, to serve with love, and you've taken
mm-hmm.
me from this to this. And I always think of that song, and I think about America's involvement, and that we took these people from flintlocks and bow and arrows to M16s.
Yes.
And that was our contribution.
Yeah, and literally overnight. Yeah.
I don't think that's something we'd be proud of.
No, certainly not.
I would.
Yeah.
I'm more for into bringing them fresh water and vaccinations.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what did you learn? You've learned about the world by travel, and you learned in a better way than a book. What did you learn about yourself?
That I'm a human being, that I have weaknesses, that I don't always do what I should do.
Uh-huh.
I know what's right, but I don't always do what's right.
Uh-huh.
I learned that I didn't have to be in a religious life, that
uh-huh.
I could survive on my own.
Uh-huh.
Partially thanks to religious life. If I hadn't had that college, if they hadn't put me through college and given me some discipline, I probably would, I may not have made it. I may have made it. Never know. I made it afterwards. I learned a lot. I think I learned what I'd already known about Asia. I knew a lot more.
Uh-huh.
I think Buddhism, I understand Buddhism a lot better. It has much more appeal to me. I read differently. I read books on Buddhism and on meditation and stuff that I didn't used to read. I think it was a part of growing up. And there's certain things that are going to happen anyway. There were some negative things about Laos that I've lost some things because of Laos, as far as my innocence. And I've lost my innocence in a lot of ways, but I mean, I lost it. I lost a big chunk of it in Laos.
Yes.
At the same time, I gained some things.
Uh-huh.
And it's a trade-off.
Sure.
And to say one is better or worse than the other, that's just the way the world is, and that happened, and there's nothing you can do to change it.
Yeah, I mean, that's always true. I mean,
it was an important part of my growing experience. I think it's, I'm much more pleased about my time in religious life and with IVS than I would have been had I, you know, you and I been in talking about my time in some fraternity at MSU. I mean, I know people that's the most important thing of their youth is my fraternity life and the things I did as a fraternity brother. And thank God I can say that was not the most important thing of my youth.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me look over this survey that you sent back, because I think there were a couple of things. Let me pause this while I do. Well, stop it while I do. It's back on again. I actually had it off rather than just on pause. Have you seen any... Well, first of all, I didn't ask this anywhere on the forum or so far yet. What is your current occupation?
My classification, I work for the state of Michigan.
Okay.
I work in the central office of the Department of Community Health.
Okay.
The Department of Community Health is in charge of mental health and public health.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we're in charge of drug programs and Medicare.
Okay.
And we control it. We're $8 billion organization. When I came in, it was less than $3 billion. It's gone up quite a bit in recent years. We've combined departments. We were just mental health. I work in the Bureau of Community and Hospital Services, and I'm in the Division of Hospital Services.
Uh-huh.
And I'm responsible to basically advise on training issues. I run a lending library of what I like to call, and what has been called by others, state-of-the-art materials for educational purposes to our hospital staff, mostly around accreditation, behavior management, health issues, safety. My division is responsible for state employees that provide service. Most of the services now are provided by contract employees. Uh-huh. We're the last of services that are directly given by state employees. And we have, when I came in the system, there were 24 institutions, and there's 8 of them now.
Okay.
So we've declined considerably.
Is there anything from your IVS experience that you picked up that you use in the way you do your job now?
It's hard to say. I couldn't know if I can divide it out.
Okay.
You know, IVS is a part of me. It's a part of him and Ben Lowes. It's a part of how I see things, how I judge things, how willing I am to accept certain things, to not take things at face value anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think I take things the same as I did at face value.
Right.
I don't believe everything I'm told.
Yeah, not just the government, but in all aspects.
In all aspects. I don't believe everything I'm told. I look for other linings. I also try to be honest about things.
Uh-huh.
And if I don't, I'll give you an example. A couple years ago, we had a training program, and there were people going into this training program. We paid a lot of money for this. It was a behavior management program. We paid a lot of money for it, $300,000. And we got through the first, I went to some of the early trainings, and we finished a training and trainers class. And I remember telling, we had different things. I was from central office, and so got to say a couple things. And I mean, I shocked a lot of people. I think I upset a lot of people because people thought this program was going to go someplace.
Uh-huh.
And it was an excellent program. There was no problem with this program. I thought it was a fantastic program. But I had to be honest. I said, what you've gotten is great training, regardless of whether this program goes on or not. Well, the assumption of the group of people that just had gone through that, their belief, like going into IVS, is that this is going to go right, or this is going to be wonderful, or if I'm a Lao and I'm in an English section at Don Doak, Americans will always be here. I have a career coming up where I'm going to be able to use English. And my reality is that just because we're doing this and we're spending $300,000 does not necessarily mean this program will go on. And inside of me, I could see the problems with the cost, not just the contract cost, but the maintenance of this program because it ran 4 weeks. that the department would be continue to give that kind of money out. I knew that they had the money at this time. They would not always have that money.
You can't count on it.
Yeah,
no.
Can't count on it. And I had to tell the group that this, you got great training, be happy that you got the great training, but don't see this as a part of a career change. That because of this, these other things are not necessarily going to happen. I couldn't help them to buy into something that I could clearly see with my experience was not necessarily going to be their future. And this was a number of years ago, and unfortunately I was right.
But that you were able to see this and to say this, mm-hmm. came out because
a lot of it was ideas.
Yeah, because of the tempering, you know, with reality that you had mm-hmm. experienced as a younger man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm hesitant to have people buy into things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hesitant to lead people somewhere where I'm not real confident in their best interest.
Oh, that they don't know what the possibilities are.
What the possibilities are here. Yeah. There's what they used to call the two-edged sword here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a downside here. And this is not a career, this is not necessarily going to, if you want to invest time, invest at some other place. This is nice, you got great training, but of the money that we've spent on training, only a few people have ever really made use of it because there hasn't been that consistency. We don't reinforce it, we don't maintain it.
Well, that's a problem with it.
And that maintenance is
not just government, but business too.
Mm-hmm.
What have I not asked you that would be worthwhile to have on tape?
I'll tell you what you haven't asked me, but I think it's been implied, and I think it needs to be put on tape, and I think
okay.
you need to hear it.
Good.
And IBS and religious life to me are very similar. I mean, these were all part of my youth from high school
uh-huh,
on.
Uh-huh.
Both mixed things, and both of these things have affected me. But something that they had some things in common, but the thing that they probably had in common the most, or most important to me, that I can say the most positive things about religious life in IBS is the people.
Uh-huh.
People that I worked with. The you know, Al Iverson was a fine person, Walt Haney was a fine person. I went to a reunion 3 years ago with some of the people that had been in religious life, and I could clearly say to them, and I've never had the opportunity to say it to the IBS people, that the best people I ever knew were in Holy Cross. I mean, I was able to be with the cream.
Uh-huh.
I spent time with the cream. These were the finest young men coming out of high schools, out of good high schools. Some of them came out of Jesuit high schools on the West Coast. Very intelligent. Many of them much more intelligent than I was, much better prepared for college than I was. So I was able to spend time with people that I could learn from, that could set an example for me, that gave me something to believe that, hey, there are people that know more than I do, there are people smarter than I am, there are people that definitely are more disciplined than I am and harder working. Dr. Porter is a good example of someone that I learned, that I saw a guy that was dedicated to what he was doing,
uh-huh.
that he was incredibly prepared, something that I at that time was not. I was prepared, but I was not as prepared as he was. And as I've gotten older,
you've understood the preparation.
I've understood the preparation end of it, and I'm much better. And people now think, Hesse, you're doing, you know, like they'll say, do such and such. And they have no concept of what the preparation is to do such and such.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they're even prepared for me to tell them that if you want this done and done right, this is what it's going to entail. And when you start this, you've got to support it. You've got to maintain it. And now I understand that much better. Dr. Porter was a part of that process.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think the most is that in IBS and in religious life, I knew the best. I knew the cream. I knew a Walt Haney and Al Iverson. I knew Dennis was a very good person.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the people I knew in IBS were incredible. Jamalia was a great person. I mean, very wise for his age, very wise and very dedicated to what he was doing. And, I think that for a lot of these people, like myself, we, to some degree, didn't act on everything that we knew. We weren't everything we could be.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Marine Corps. We weren't everything we could be.
Yeah.
We didn't make it We settled sometimes for less than we should have settled for. We didn't settle for the best. But there was a potential there that I don't think was realized, but I did get to spend time with some of the best, people that could have been the best.
Okay. So that's one thing that I didn't ask. Is everything else fairly?
I'd say you probably asked pretty much everything.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff I can't remember because I don't think about it every day.
Well, no. I mean, it's pulling things out after a long period of time.
Is there anything you want to ask that you haven't asked?
No. I had pretty much gone through, and I wanted to see what I give you a chance to say.
I was lucky.
What I might have missed.
I consider I was very lucky to have run into IBS.
Uh-huh.
It was painful as some of the times were. It was a very, I was very lucky to have done it, to get things out of my system. Only in recent years have I enjoyed traveling with Charlene, which has made me travel. And I've gotten much more into medieval times, going to France. Medieval history is much more interesting to me now than it was, and that's a good thing. But, I don't know what I was going to say. For a long time, I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, maybe you're getting my mental coma. Maybe I'm passing it off to you. Maybe what I'll do is just say that it's now, 3:14?
Mm-hmm.
And say thank you very much, and just turn off the tape. And,
okay.
And I'll ask you if I could, what I'm doing is when going around is when I remember, is to take a photograph of the people as they are currently.
Sure.
I don't have a flash with me, so we'll have to go outside.
Okay.
But we can do that, and thank you very much.
Okay.